Welcome to the Rock Fight, where we speak our truth, slay sacred cows, and sometimes agree to disagree. This is an outdoor podcast that aims for the head. I'm Colin True, and today it's the sexiest topic of them all. We're talking about closeouts, baby. Woo! Don't worry. I promise to make closeouts spicier than you think they can be. But first, to all of our new listeners, welcome aboard. I'm excited to have you here, but can I ask a quick favor of you? Please, text the Rock Fight to one of your friends who also likes going outside. The show is growing, and by sharing the show with others, we can keep it growing. Thank you for being a rock fighter and listening and helping our community grow. All right, let's start the show. Welcome to the Rock Fight, Rock Fight, Rock Fight. In 2002, I started my first job at an outdoor brand, customer service team leader for the Urban Customer Service Team at Timberland. Urban was a designation for the collection of Timberland products that had jumped to the front of the line as the most important to the company, thanks to the adoption of Timberland's yellow boot by the hip-hop community and the pop culture exposure and explosion for the brand that had come with it. And after years of working in sporting goods and outdoor retail, I finally had a job at a brand known for its heritage in the outdoors. But I ended up managing a team of customer service reps who were processing orders for iconic retailers based in New York City. At that point, I felt pretty far removed from the outdoors in my day-to-day work life. Now, what I couldn't have known at the time was that that gig would eventually lead to me being a tech rep and would lay the foundation for the rest of my outdoor industry career, as well as help form a lot of the opinions you get to hear me spew here on The Rock Fight. And while in that role, I got to understand fulfillment and supply chain on a level that I'd never see again in my industry career. Timberland had crossed into being a billion-dollar brand just before I arrived, and the urban category was the biggest driver of that $1 billion. So it was a crash course in the complicated global supply chain of a big brand. How stuff gets forecasted, sold, made, shipped, warehoused, delivered. It was a huge education point for me. And I also got to learn about the world of closeouts. Closeouts are something that only retailers and brands think about. Consumers don't know anything or care to know anything about closeouts. Maybe the occasional rando will be shopping in an outlet mall or a store and understand that there's a difference between what's available to them in that store versus most retailers. But at that point, they're just pulled in by the significantly discounted prices to ask any questions or care to know why everything is so cheap. And the basics here are simple. A brand creates a product and takes it to market. Based on market trends and retail demand, a forecast is produced and factories start making that product. Retailers place orders. The product ships and is sold on retail shelves. If a perfect scenario could ever be achieved, all units of this product would be sold to a consumer, warehouses and retail shelves would be clean, and the process repeats. But the reality is that nothing ever sells through 100%. Forecasts can be wrong and whole runs of colors or styles can sit in warehouses and not go anywhere. And brands now have to consider inventory for selling directly to consumers, and will often have to start making things before a retailer order is even placed, taking a gamble on what they think will happen and testing the confidence that they have in that style or a particular color. And by the way, this is pretty universal. I could be talking about shoes, apparel, gear. Each of those things bring their own specific complications to this process, but this is basically how it goes for anything you see sold in your local gear shop or REI. So there are always going to be closeouts. And largely speaking, if a brand sells through 80% of their inventory, that's really good. But even in that scenario, there's still 20% left over. Retailers have leftovers that they want to send back to the brands. Brands have leftovers that they need to find a home for. And the longer this inventory sits around, the more dangerous it becomes. Because it costs money to warehouse stuff. So if you have a pile of unsold goods, not only did you not get paid for selling that stuff to someone else, you're paying for it to live in a nondescript building in rural California or Kentucky. This is on the brand side, and there's a whole other side of this equation at the retail level. But for today, I want to stay focused on the brand side because my experience here will bring me to my point. This is a normal part of the sales cycle, and when I was a newbie at Timberland in the early 2000s, selling this stuff wasn't the sales rep's responsibility. We had a cleaner, a specialist, someone who spent their time finding a home for these orphan products at the best price possible. Now, you've seen Pulp Fiction, right? When Marcellus Wallace calls in the Wolf to help his boys out of a jam, well, we had our own Winston Wolf.
You're Jimmy, right? This is your house?
Sure is.
I'm Winston Wolf. I solve problems.
Good. good.
So our guy, I don't want to say his name. I haven't gotten his permission to do so, and I don't know how excited he'd be for me to be talking about him on a podcast, even if it's painting him in a positive light. So we'll just call this guy Winston. Winston's sole purpose was to purge the unsellable, to clear out the stuff we were wrong about, to make room for the stuff we'd surely be right about next season. I got to know Winston because his customer service rep, the person who placed his orders and ensured they shipped in a timely manner, was on the Urban customer service team. So I got to spend quite a bit of time with him. And Winston taught me two easy-to-remember mantras when it comes to moving product in the closeout world. The first is that there are no bad products, just bad prices. Remember a second ago when I was talking about consumers at an outlet mall being excited for how cheap everything was in that store and not really caring about how it got there? Yeah, the stuff that those people are buying are mostly the rejects. Residents of the island of misfit outdoor toys. Stuff that couldn't be delivered to a retailer or sold at full price on the brand's website is now selling like hotcakes because the price is now, quote, right. Eventually, the right price will move the worst product. And the second thing Winston taught me is that if you eat like a mouse, you shit like a mouse. And if you eat like an elephant, you shit like an elephant. Basically, the bigger you are, the bigger you shit. Winston had been at Timberland a long time and seen the growth and the challenges that came with that growth. More money means more product, which means more stuff without a home. And Winston was our cleaner, our own Winston Wolf, the guy who fixes problems. But that doesn't mean the job was always easy. So what's my point in all of this? Well, last week, SGB and The Daily both reported on the good position that TJX is sitting in these days. TJX owns retailers like Home Goods, Marshalls, TJ Maxx, and for the more outdoorsy among us, Sierra. Sierra, formerly Sierra Trading Post, is the go-to spot for outdoor brands to move off of their closeouts. Between their 95 brick-and-mortar locations and an online store, if you're looking for first-quality closeouts in the outdoor world, there is no better place to look. Now, every brand has their own closeouts page on their website, but Sierra has every brand. Well, except Patagonia. A search on Sierra.com for Patagonia brought nothing back. But pretty much everyone else is on there. In fact, doing some quick math, I counted roughly 8,400 products, split about evenly between the men's and women's product categories on Sierra's website. And the news out of TJX is that Sierra is going to grow in 2024 to the tune of 26 new stores. Now, I know someone else who studied under the tutelage of Winston from Timberland, and according to this person, Sierra is a dream partner to work with. They recognize their role and are easy to do business with. They know how to move the misfit toys and know how to get paid to do so. They're the vultures of the outdoor industry, cleaning up the mess left behind by others. And you might hear a word like vulture as a pejorative descriptor, but it's not. Vultures are an incredibly important part of our ecosystem. We'd be ankle deep in roadkill carrion if not for our friends the vultures. So I don't use that word as an insult, more like a compliment accompanied with a thank you note. The problem is the reason behind the need for 26 more Sierra stores. We're making too much stuff, and we have been for a long time, and we continue to do so. Let me put it another way. Outdoor brands who market themselves on the back of environmentalism, conservation, and the quest for sustainable manufacturing continue to make so much stuff that the chief retailer for the stuff that was made that no one wants is opening 26 new stores in the next 12 months to accommodate it all. The headline for the coverage of TJX and Sierra last week in SGB was, quote, TJX is sitting pretty as most others deal with market turmoil, end quote. I literally laughed out loud when I read that. Because of course they are. But TJX wouldn't be opening 26 new stores if they thought this was a short-term problem. We're not talking about a handful of locations here. They have years of data to understand what they'll need to support those stores, and the number they settled on is 26. Now, TJX as a whole, so including all of their retail brands, is a $50 billion company. That's the same size as Nike. In the figures published by SGB, the Marmaxx division of TJX, which comprises Sierra, TJ Maxx, and Marshalls, represents $30 billion of that $50 billion. We're talking about a lot of shit here. The only thing I'm trying to shine a light on here is the continued hypocrisy of outdoor brands because many of them just want it both ways. They say they want to make things more sustainable or protect our outdoor playgrounds, but not at the expense of doing anything they're not mandated to do. Want an example? We've known, like, forever about the dangerous implications of PFAS, forever chemicals. when do things actually start to change? When it's mandated by the fifth largest economy in the world, the state of California, that they have to. For years, brands have been hiding behind the bullshit line of, our customers demand a certain level of performance, and these new DWR treatments, they just can't offer that. No, most of your customers are just people buying a raincoat at REI and don't know a damn thing about DWR treatments or PFAS. And because no one did it on their own time, there is now going to be a surge of unwanted inventory because everyone is going to do it at the same time. Look, I don't have a problem with brands prioritizing making money. That is 100% their right to do. It's their obligation to do. They are for-profit businesses. But when you prey on the topics that outdoor enthusiasts value and offer bullshit quips about circularity or sustainability, or enter categories where you don't even belong, which results in even more inventory that you shouldn't even be making, yeah, I have a real problem with that. So to wrap this all up, do you remember the Wolf's plan to get Jules and Vincent out of trouble as laid out by Harvey Keitel in Pulp Fiction? Here's a reminder. This is what it was.
I need you two folks to do is take those cleaning products and clean the inside of the car. I'm talking fast, fast, fast. You need to go in the back seat, scoop up all those little pieces of brain and skull. Get it out of there. Wipe down the upholstery. Now, when it comes to upholstery, you don't need to be spick and span. You don't need to eat off it. Just give it a good once-over. Now, Jimmy, we need to raid your linen closet. I need blankets, I need comforters, I need quilts, I need bedspreads. The thicker the better, the darker the better. No whites. Can't use them. We need to camouflage the interior of the car. We're going to line the front seat and the back seat and the floorboards with quilts and blankets. Jimmy, lead the way. Boys, get to work.
The Wolf isn't interested in how the problem came to be. He's just there to solve the problem. Winston from my Timberland days and the vultures at Sierra are doing the same thing. They're solving the problem. But I think that taking a look at those little pieces of brain and skull, the ones created by outdoor brands, the ones they're trying to cover up with Jimmy's wife's linens, maybe, just maybe, that should probably be on our radar just a little bit more. All right, that's the show for today. I want your feedback. Send your emails on any of the outdoor ideas that aim for the head that we cover here on the show to myrockfight@gmail.com. Have you signed up for our newsletter yet? You can get a single weekly update from the Rockfight universe every Sunday morning in your inbox. Head to rockfight.co and click join the mailing list to sign up today. The Rockfight is a production of Rockfight LLC. I'm Colin True. Thanks for listening, and here to take us out with the Rockfight fight song as Krista makes. We'll see you next time, Rockfighters. Rockfight.